Welcome to this latest market focus podcast from Economic Perspectives. I'm Peter Warburton, Chief Economist at EP, and the title of the podcast is Ubi Corpora, Where Are the Bodies? Despite all the economic carnage in the first half of 2020, there was a marked decrease in corporate insolvencies around the world, with typical annual declines of 20 to 30%. Most nations made changes to the insolvency regime to protect companies from going bankrupt, including the suspension of insolvency proceedings. In addition, governments and central banks took measures to counteract the economic effects of lockdowns and to support small businesses. However, the most direct support for businesses has come from governments in the shape of cash grants and guaranteed loans. With a few exceptions, these remedies are temporary, and most countries began to reinstate normal insolvency practices before the end of 2020. With the arrival of the vaccines, governments will be increasingly reluctant to extend grants and reliefs. Indeed, notwithstanding government support and debt forbearance, US corporate bankruptcy filings surpassed 600 in 2020, the highest count since 2012. By sector, the largest number of casualties was in consumer discretionary, followed by industrials and energy. As the bankruptcy courts reopen and work through their backlogs, and as increasing numbers of companies run out of cash in 2021, there's likely to be a spike in insolvencies and a clear understanding of the permanent damage to developed economies from the prolonged disruption to the movement of people and goods. Moreover, fiscal authorities around the world will be waiting for their cue, that happy moment when the domestic economy has burst into life after the dark winter of lockdown recedes. These tax fiends, box tickers and penny pinchers are poised to recoup their lost revenues and zip up their purses just as an unsuspecting public breathes a sigh of relief, albeit through a face mask. For the Exchequer realises that there will be no second chances, no second bites of this particular cherry, such as the potential cascade of insolvency that the tax authorities must be quick to present their claims. And the welfare departments envisage only a slender window of political opportunity in which to suspend emergency payments before the howls of protest reach their crescendo. For now, patience is the watchword and everyone sleeps soundly in their bed while the henchmen bide their time. Over the past 10 months, what were supposed to be vibrant, energetic, capitalistic economies have slid into a socialistic slumber. With every passing month, there is understandable concern that the disciplines and instincts previously taken for granted will have emaciated. Accelerated restructuring of the advanced economies will leave many without a chair to sit on when the music stops. Where are the bodies? We will soon find out. Well, of our two featured themes in this market focus, the first article as written by my colleague Ivan Bitteau. He considers the balance of risks in the crude oil market in 2021, judging that the delayed resumption of travel-related oil consumption and an over-eager reinstatement of oil production cuts will bias the market to weakness. Whereas central bank liquidity has been an overwhelming force, and indeed remains so, capable of generating powerful appreciation in financial markets, the oil market is much more reactive to demand and supply shocks, and the inferences drawn from weekly inventory data. Moreover, the seemingly endless supply of cheap corporate credit will enable the operators of many unprofitable oil wells to continue producing. In the past 2 months, rising optimism over the vaccine campaign and the prospective reopening of the economy in the spring has led investors becoming increasingly bullish on the reflation narrative. Ordinarily, this would involve positive demand shocks for commodities, suggesting that the rally in oil prices may only have just begun. Even though the argument sounds convincing, we must not forget that economic activity in 2021 will still be heavily restricted. Also, are oil producer nations too optimistic about the demand forecast for 2021? In January, OPEC forecast for global oil demand in 2021 fell to just below 96 million barrels a day, from 97.7 million barrels a day in July 2020. But is it enough? Currently, the excess of supply of demand should not be significant enough to influence oil prices in the very short run, but further negative demand shocks are in store if, for example, the US driving season is suspended and if European summer holidays are cancelled. Oil prices could be significantly lower for 2021 due to the uncertainty associated with the duration of lockdowns and also the hesitancy of global travellers in most economies. With some sectors starting to show signs of an overheating stock market and with economic activity in most of the Asian economies close to their prior levels, it's also likely that Chinese officials will gradually start to tighten financial conditions, which will lead to a slow decline in credit intensity in the coming months. Hence, the recent decrease we've seen in the past 2 months could be the start of a new tightening credit policy cycle in the medium term. This could potentially dampen commodity markets in general and also weaken the momentum we've seen in the oil market in the past few months. The annual change in the 12-month rolling sum of total social financing has been a good six-month leading indicator of oil prices, that is the WTI front month, in the past cycle. If market participants begin to price in a tightening in Chinese credit policy, this could cap the rally in WTI and see a reversal. The second article is written by my colleague Tom Trail, who revisits the concept of the optimum global equity portfolio using a standard risk-reward model. As equity prices head for the stratosphere and the historical and conventional valuation metrics are stretched to bursting, equity investors are faced with a dilemma: buy the future and hope it's a sunny place, or hunker down and hope that beaten-up market sectors and stocks will rise from the ashes of perennial underperformance. When sitting on the sidelines is not an option, it's useful to reflect on the country and sector allocations that have delivered the best risk-adjusted returns over the last 25 years. In terms of markets, the most recent quinquennium, it would have been optimal to stick to the US and the Far East. In terms of market sectors, healthcare, utilities and technology would have taken almost all the prizes. So the optimum portfolio is find yourself a hut. For the 10 subsector calculation, utilities are assigned the largest weight in the minimum various portfolio. This is perhaps unsurprising given their reputation as comparatively risk-off sector. Healthcare also features heavily, remembering that there was a biotech boom before the FANGs took off. And despite its strong performance, the technology sector is not featured in the lowest variance portfolio, although telecom is included. Three quarters of the calculated optimum portfolio is healthcare, with two extremes making up the rest: technology and utilities. Two powerful ideas, the optimal portfolio Sharpe ratio and relative outperformance, can be combined to construct a profitable trading strategy. We examined the performance of five portfolios containing between one and five sectors based on their relative 12-month Sharpe ratios. It turns out that combinations of three or four sectors offer the best risk-reward ratio with better returns than the index and lower standard deviations. Finally, we review our favoured assets. Every 6 months, we look back at the returns performance of our favoured assets and market focus, looking to provide a consistent measure of performance between assets since they were introduced. Of the 20 ideas for which we have data, the average annualised return was above 25%, and the two OTC trades both went in the expected direction. Our best performance came from global tech hardware equities, but there are strong returns in many of the classes. Korean equities are up over 40% in local currency terms in the year since we first highlighted them. For now, our 15 favoured assets are, in no particular order, nuance of a dip in the oil price. So basically,